Gotta do at least some of the next chapter. If this week, if recordings that can be any length, I want them to be somewhat truncated.
That's because I'm crunching on editing for Rent.
But yeah,
me see. Okay. Chapter 16.
it. Okay. No. No, don't give it to me until I do it. 13's gonna be next month. I can't get most of the money for that until next month anyway. So I'm not. That's not part of rent this month. But never pay me before I edit. Never do that. Some of my clients do it, and it drives me fucking up the wall. Because I have to remember which money in my PayPal I shouldn't transfer to my bank account yet. No, yeah. Clark was talking with me about that last night. That yeah, she's definitely on that to some, just to some extent. I'm sure you can guess, Sakiko. Anyway. And yeah, David, you know that this is a public channel, right? Far from being a DM, David, this is the largest Discord server that you are on. Unless you're on lease. Ah, see, he's got you there, Clark. The fuck do you know? I was talking to someone I was helping with audio stuff last night. And she was having problems with plosives, and I was like, well, I'll mail you a scrap of dead cat because I have way too much. She's like, okay, cool. It's like, in the meantime, I'm looking on Amazon for a sock, and I'm like, have you tried a sock? And she goes, what if it isn't thick enough? And I'm like, use two. And she goes, chin scratch emoji. Like, yes. We're fucking all pings in a fucking treehouse. Chapter 16, Feasts, Electives, and Student Organizations, Part 2. 2 September 1993, 5 o'clock p.m. As the third year Gryffindors entered the foyer to the castle after their adventure with Hagrid's hippogriffs, they were met by a scowling Malachi Sturgeon and his hideous cat, who apparently went by the name of Mr. Crookshanks, both of whom seemed to mortally Both of them seemed mortally offended by the amount of mud they were tracking into the buildings. How should I voice sturgeon? Oh, that's a question. No! It says, but honestly, it's a struggle to keep a straight face while doing an Argus Filch impersonation! Yes! I don't give a fuck, Sakiko. I don't care. You shut the fuck up. It's my audiobook. Just look at all this filth, the man roared in a fury. Vandals, they don't have you. As the various Gryffindors mumbled their apologies, the caretaker shook his head and then pointed at Jim.
You, boy, come with me.
And with that, Sturgeon turned and stormed off without waiting for Jim's response. The boy who lived blinked in confusion before turning to his friends with a shrug and then heading after the caretaker.
It's been a while since I've done the voice. I've got the fucking idiot ago. It sounds like this. Hello. I'm Marcus Filch. This is Marcus Filch's voice. It's gotten less understandable every time. He's supposed to sound like he's from the north.
The problem, one of the problems, I don't fucking know. One of the problems with this voice is that, okay, I stole it from Roy Dotrice, the guy that did the Song of Ice and Fire audiobooks. This is the Walder Frey voice. And the problem with it, one of the problems with it, is that in order for me to get really down into it, my touchstone line for it, and this isn't my fault, this is just the one that I fucking remember, is this.
She's only 15 years old, and her honey's only for me.
That's from Game of Thrones. I didn't write that. But it contains all of the proper syllables and vowels and shit to get me into the proper accent for it. I'll retake the lines.
Just look at all this filth! Vandals, the lot of you! That sounds like a you problem, not a me problem.
David, I know what you're making reference to. I will say this, though. If you want cheap vodka that's very good, you're going to hate me for this. It's called Russian Standard. It is among the cheapest vodka you can find. It is actually made in Russia. It is a very popular vodka in Russia, and it's fucking delicious. I haven't tried. I mean, yeah, but you might. Well, see, I don't know if David's being facetious or not. Can you see why I think that David might be being facetious?
I'm serious. Tovarish is the good shit. This is just time to do it. Is you an Argus Filch? Percy, hello!
See, it was... it wasn't until... Okay. For those of you that don't know, this voice I started doing to be Slytherin's portrait in Academy and Victory. And we changed him to Spanish after several chapters. And... But I really like the voice, and so did Matt. And I'm like, I have to keep this voice in there somewhere. And I realized, oh, right. When I was recording POS, I could never decide what voice I wanted Filch to have. So I'll give that voice to him. And it was only much later that I realized I stole that voice from Roy Dotrice, who used it for Walder Frey. Guess who plays Walder Frey in the show? Fucking Argus Filch plays Walder Frey in the show. That wasn't the joke at first. It kind of is the joke now.
It's the sad reason I used to give goblins in Harry Potter this voice until I changed it.
Because that was the deliberately bad Warwick Davis impression from the Yogg's cast that sounds absolutely nothing like Warwick Davis whatsoever, and that was funny to me. So when I did goblins at first, when I would do goblins in Alexander Quick, I would do them with that voice, and then the next major time I had to do goblins, I did them as Dave and Lister and Rimmer from Red Dwarf. And with that, Sturgeon turned and stormed off without waiting for Jim's response. The boy who lived blinked in confusion before turning to his friends with a shrug and then heading after the caretaker. Moments later, he followed the man into the cramped office that had previously belonged to Argus Filch. To Jim's surprise, it was even messier than when Filch had occupied it, mainly because a large cabinet that bore the label confiscated and extremely dangerous had been cleaned out, its contents spread out across every work surface as if Sturgeon had been searching for some particular bit of contraband.
Snot-nosed little hellions!
The man snapped as he gently dropped his cat down to the floor. The man snapped as he gently dropped his cat down to the floor before turning back to Jim with a sneer.
Why, back in my day, detentions would have been spent hanging in the dungeons by your thumbs!
Jim stared at the strange man for a few seconds before speaking.
Begging your pardon, Mrs. Sturgeon, sir, but when exactly did you go to Hogwarts if they were still torturing the students? Because Mr. Filch's complaints to the contrary, I'm pretty sure they stopped hanging students by their thumbs quite a long time ago.
Sturgeon's face twisted into a snarl of rage before he suddenly lost his composure and burst into laughter.
It's all right.
Hang on.
Yes, you're right. I suppose that was a bit over the top. I thought it best to adopt an attitude similar to my predecessors. The better to make students wish to avoid me so they wouldn't take too much interest in our activities.
But honestly, it's a struggle to keep a straight face while doing an Argus Filch impersonation.
Jim blinked in confusion.
Our activities?
The other man tilted his head as if intrigued by Jim's response.
You really have no idea who I am, do you? I know you're the new tech. I know you're the new cat. He probably wouldn't have dropped the voice.
But honestly, it's a struggle to keep a straight face while doing an Argus Filch impersonation.
And then,
you really have no idea who I am, do you?
I know you're the new caretaker, he said cautiously. I know you're the new caretaker, he said cautiously. Should I know you from anywhere else?
Extraordinary,
the man said with some degree of amazement.
Simply extraordinary.
Before Jim could say any more, Sturgeon swiftly reached into the inner pocket of his ability. No, wait. Why did I do that? Sturgeon swiftly reached into the inner pocket of his shabby coat and pulled out a folded sheet of paper which he handed over to the boy. With some hesitation, Jim unfolded the paper and read the words written on it. Then he looked back and forth between the paper and the man in front of him. Then he looked back and forth between the paper and the man in front of him in confusion before his face finally lit up with recognition and delight. "Bloody hell!" he exclaimed with a laugh. The caretaker made a sour face and clucked his tongue at the outburst. "Language, Jim," chided Remus Lupin. Meanwhile, back in the great hall, Ron had taken a seat next to Hermione, though he had saved a seat on the other side. for Jim, and it practically growled at first. He had tried to claim it, only to back away fearfully. "Hope Jim's okay with that new caretaker," he said. "Guy's as creepy as old Filchie, but not half as old and worn down." "I'm sure Jim is perfectly safe with Mr. Sturgeon," Hermione said confidently as she picked up a pitcher of pumpkin juice, but then she paused for a moment and stared at the pitcher for several seconds intently before putting it back. "On second thought, I think I'll stick with water," she said with a frown. Ron nodded and handed her a nearby water jug while he thought about how to proceed. "So," he finally said, "we'll be doing our group study thing again this year."
"I'm not sure.
If I do, it won't be as intensive as it has been the last 2 years. I've got a very heavy course load." Ron thought that was an understatement. According to the rumor mill, Hermione Granger was taking every elective. He had assumed that required some sort of time travel magic until Percy had said that A, time travel was impossible, and B, both he and Bill had done the same thing as third years. It was doable, but exhausting, and Percy had described it as being worse than his fifth-year OWL preparations.
"Well, see, the thing is," Ron stammered nervously, "I was kind of hoping that maybe I could join your group this year. I thought you were already in a study group with Jim and Lavender Brown."
"Actually, that stopped last year, after that whole air of Slytherin rubbish. Lavender's family made her stop talking to Jim. It was unpleasant," Ron grimaced. "Also, she kind of got mad at me for asking to copy off her a few times." Hermione sniffed delicately.
"Well, I hope you're not planning to copy off me," she said in a lecturing tone. "The point of an education is to learn to do your own work."
"I wouldn't do that. I know education is important." She smiled and shook her head.
"Is that why you're taking divination and care of magical creatures, the two easiest O's that Hogwarts offers?"
"Yes, I mean, no," Ron exclaimed with embarrassment. "That is..." He paused to look around to see if anyone was listening before leaning towards Hermione.
"I want to be a healer," he whispered.
Hermione opened her mouth to respond, but then paused in confusion.
What?
Ron swallowed nervously.
"I want to be a healer someday. That means interning with Madame Pomfrey after OWLs and then getting an apprenticeship in St. Mungo's after I graduate. I'm taking easy electives because stuff like ancient runes and arithmancy won't help me with either of those, but I absolutely have to get O's on my OWLs for potions, charms, and herbology to even have a chance."
Hermione stared at Ron for several seconds, almost as if she'd never seen him before.
"Ron, I had no idea."
She thought for a moment and then nodded her head.
"I still don't know if I'm working with the study group, but if you need extra help, I can tutor you. I'll just need to find extra time somewhere." Her expression turned stern.
"But no copying off my papers," Ron grinned.
"Sure thing."
Hermione continued to study Ron for several seconds as if considering options.
"I'll tell you what, though. In exchange for tutoring, would you be willing to do something for me?
Name it."
"Well, you see, I'm starting this club." "I'm starting this club.
there's no way for this to read in audio without me saying.
Meanwhile, what sort of club? Neville asked. I know Hermione's starting a group of some kind. This one's different, Lavender said. In some ways, quite the opposite. Oliver Wood jumped in. You see, after that business on the express platform yesterday... No, that's Irish. You see, after that business on the express platform yesterday, some of us were thinking that the Muggleborns and Half-Blood students got bent out of shape over no name because they weren't raised in our culture and don't really understand it. So some of us got together and decided that maybe we need a club of our own so that we can teach one another about our various family traditions. So we can teach one another about our various family traditions and stuff like that. That way, maybe we'd be better able to explain how things work in the wizard world to those raised outside it. So, you want to start a pureblood club? Neville inquired cautiously. Isn't there bad history around that idea? No! Lavender exclaimed, almost offended. Nothing bigoted or gross like that. It's all just about celebrating our own heritage and shared history and stuff. Nothing death-eatery. Neville opened his mouth to ask whether death-eatery was actually proper English, but then, over Lavender's shoulder, he happened to notice... He happened to notice Theo sitting alone at the Slytherin table. His mouth slapped shut into an annoyed grimace. I think about it, he finally said.
Okay.
Yeah, let's launch in.
In the caretaker's office, Jim and Remus were having an enjoyable meal to themselves, delivered by house elves, and the boy was still marveling at how Remus had concealed his true identity.
I did.
I just can't believe that the headmaster hid your real name behind a Fidelius, he said, while looking down once more at the scrap of paper that said Malachi Sturgeon is actually the werewolf Remus Lupin. I mean, I could see you and everything, but I just couldn't make the connection.
Honestly, I can hardly believe it myself, Remus replied. I was, of course, aware of the Fidelius, though I was abroad when your parents used it to make Sirius their secret keeper, but I was shocked when Professor Dumbledore explained that he could use it to conceal identities and other secrets. While it's in place and he remains my secret keeper, no one will recognize me as Remus Lupin, and no one will guess that Malachi Sturgeon is a werewolf, no matter how many times I miss work for the full moon, which I suspect will make dealing with Professor Snape much easier for us.
It's kind of creepy, though, Jim said with a shudder. If you could conceal that sort of information so easily with a Fidelius, a dark wizard could cause all sorts of problems with it. True, but the headmaster assured me that very few wizards could cast a Fidelius at all, and only a handful of people in the world could alter it for secrets other than hidden locations. The spell is also limited in that a person can be secret keeper for one secret at a time. A person can only have one secret to be kept at a time, and the person who cast the spell can only maintain one iteration of it at a time. So I feel relatively confident that we need not fear dark wizards abusing this charm anytime soon. Jim nodded and changed the subject. So you've told me, or shown me, I guess, your secret. When are you going to tell Harry? And Ron, too, I hope, but... I know you wanted to reconnect with Harry. Remus looked away. I will. But I'd like to get to know him first, he sighed. Frankly, I'm a bit worried that he might think poorly of me for leaving Britain while he was left with... He won't, Jim interrupted confidently. He'll understand what happened. About what Mum and Dad, well, you know. He looked at Ramus cautiously. Are you planning on telling Mum you're here? I won't be surprised if you're keeping Dad in the dark, but you are working with my mother after all. I haven't decided yet. To be honest, I think it might simplify things for now if I kept the number of people who know my secret to a minimum. You, Ron, and eventually Harry. In the meantime, we'll need to set up a schedule of Wushido lessons for you. And also Animagus training, if you're still bent on that. And since it will have to be a secret, we'll have to figure out some system of... We'll have to figure out some secrets for getting you detentions that can be served with me. Jim laughed. No fear. I've never had much trouble getting detentions in the past. Then he glanced over to the empty cabinet against the wall. So what's with that? Was there something confiscated and extremely dangerous in particular you were looking for? Remus shrugged wistfully. Just an idle fancy. There was something I helped to make that I was rather proud of that Filch took from your father in 1976. It was foolish to think Filch had actually held on to it all these years. I imagine he destroyed it after we graduated. Oh, what was it? I think I'm settling into a more consistent new gym. The Slytherin table in the Great Hall. While going over some Quidditch plays with Adrian Pusey, Harry happened to glance down towards the junior Death Eater end of the table in time to make eye contact with Gregory Goyle, and the boy quickly mouthed, "Can we talk?" in an unfortunately obvious manner that Harry hoped no one else noticed. He responded with a discreet nod and then ignored Goyle completely for the rest of dinner. Afterwards, he managed to catch the other boy... Afterwards, he managed to catch the other boy away from Crabbe and the rest of their circle and pull him into an empty classroom, which Harry promptly sealed off with several privacy spells. "We really need to work on your subtlety, Greg," Harry finally said. Goyle ignored the dig. "You promised that if I spied for you, you'd help save Amy from a forced marriage. Have you gotten anywhere?" "Well, first of all, you haven't actually done much in the way of spying for quite a while since Draco has transferred schools. However, I have promised to do everything I can for Amy, and I will. I have plans in place for dealing with that, but I'm not in a position to put them into action right at this... I was under the impression that we had until summer. Has something changed?" Greg looked dismayed. "No, at least not about the date. Lord Knott wants to wait until after she turns 13 next June. I guess he thinks that will make it less gross, I suppose, if she's officially a teenager. But he wants to meet her next month. My father said that on Halloween, the day of the first Hogsmeade visit, he'll get permission for her to come, even though she's a second year. I'm to escort her to the Three Broomsticks so that Knott, Amy, and my family can all have lunch together, and he and Amy can... Yeah. So that not Amy and my family can all have lunch together and he and Amy can get to know each other. Goyle shuddered at that, while Harry made a face and once again renewed his personal vow to destroy Tiberius Knott someday. "So long as it's just lunch, we'll get through it. I'll be in Hogsmeade and stay near the Three Broomsticks. If he tries anything more than a simple lunch date, well, I'll think of something. Otherwise, we stick to the original plan." "Yeah," Goyle said urgently, "but what is the original plan? You haven't told me anything about what you're going to do." "No, Greg, and I don't plan to. I'm sorry, but you're just going to have to trust me." The other boy was visibly unhappy, but he nodded his acceptance. Later, another meeting took place, as Harry finally introduced the seventh-year prefects, Titus Mitchell and Selina Harper, to the Prince's lair and the books and other items it contained. Also present were Blaise and Theo, the latter of whom caused a bit of controversy by his presence. Neither prefect was from a family affected by the ultimate sanction. Mitchell was a half-blood and Harper a pure-blood, but neither of their families had any... But neither of their families had any oath bonds to either the Wizengamot or any of its member families. Still, both of them noted that the clear majority of Slytherins would be affected, and neither of them relished becoming tainted by the sanctioned side effects while on the cusp of graduating. After some discussion, it was agreed that the two prefects would show public disdain for Theo when among other Slytherins, but would also punish house members who bullied him because of strict orders from Snape and Dumbledore. As Serena and Titus were leaving, Harry spoke up. "I almost forgot. The password to get in and out of the lair is Fierce Blue Puppy." The two seventh years looked at each other in confusion. "What is the significance of that phrase?" Mitchell asked. "There isn't any. I just picked three random words from the dictionary, but last year I tried to be clever with the password and it bit me. So this year I'm trying to be more sensible about security." After the prefect's departure, Blaise turns to Harry. "Okay, now that they're gone, we can get to something that we shouldn't have talked about before now, but I've been giving you the chance to be the one to bring it up. What do you know about the Azkaban breakout?" Harry looked at him blandly. "What makes you think I know anything about the Azkaban breakout?" "Well, you haven't been brainstorming with us ever since the breakout occurred, trying to figure out who is behind it or what their goal is. Nor have you actually shown any particular concern about it. And your father is Chief Auror, and your brother is the boy who lived, so I'm sure you know more than anyone outside the government." Harry made a face. "Speaking purely hypothetically, if I did know anything about it, I couldn't share it with either of you." "Why? Wait. What? Who the fuck was talking?" "That was Blaze." "Oh, it said this for something else. Right. Why?" asked Theo. "Oaths or something?" "Or something," Harry answered vaguely. Blaze stared at him aghast. "Oh, for the love of you, you're involved. You're actually involved personally in the escape of the worst five Death Eaters in Azkaban." Technically, thought Harry, it was only the worst four. Of course, he also knew that Blaze had never credited Harry. Of course, he also knew that Blaze had never credited Harry's suspicion that Sirius Black might be innocent. "Blaze, Theo," he finally said, "you have both put a lot of trust in me so far. I'm going to ask you to trust me now that there is nothing I can say to you. I'm going to ask you to trust me now that there is nothing I can say to you about the Azkaban breakout, and so stop asking me questions about the topic." It was indeed a testament to the two boys' faith in Harry Potter that they grudgingly... It was indeed a testament to the two boys' faith in Harry Potter that they grudgingly agreed to his request, though Theo did have one bleak warning. "But speaking purely hypothetically, Harry, if you did have something to do with the breakout, don't ever get caught, or else people might actually hate you worse than me." Meanwhile, in Gryffindor Tower, Hermione was grudgingly reviewing a list of the 17 things that Lavender Brown most dreaded. The girl had stopped at 17 because she honestly couldn't think of any more things she might be dreading, and the 17th item was, in fact...
Something I haven't thought of that I won't remember until October 16th, when it's too late.
Reviewing the list, Hermione reviewed each individual dread, asked a few questions for clarification, and then jotted down some notes for things she thought Lavender could perhaps do to prevent anything bad from happening. A few of them she simply marked through with a quill. When Lavender asked why, she said,
I understand why you might be dreading your owls and newts, but even if you do fail them, you won't find out about it for years to come, so that's not something that can happen by the 16th of October.
A logical point that Lavender accepted. Finally, Hermione got to the penultimate item, number 16, Binky.
And what, pray tell, is a Binky?
Hermione inquired while trying to keep any hint of disdain from her voice.
Binky's my new pet rabbit. My parents got it for me this summer, but they won't let me bring it to Hogwarts. He's still young and small, and my stupid brother... He's still young and small, and my stupid little brother Elwood keeps taking him out of his hutch to play with him after getting to latch it properly when he puts him back. Binky might get out someday and run off or get eaten by an animal.
Hermione stared at the other girl.
And you would describe this possibility as something you dread?
Lavender shrugged.
Maybe, I guess.
The other girl sighed.
All right, then. I assume the Browns have house elves, so write home and ask your parents to order a house elf to keep an extra eye on Binky, especially when Elwood is playing with him.
And she wrote that instruction on the parchment, along with instructions for avoiding Dementors, gold-digging boys after her inheritance, dragonpox, acne, and falling off the school's moving stairs. She simply marked through several other dreads, such as you-know-who returning, Grindelwald returning, and Lavender flunking all her exams as things that couldn't possibly be averted or even likely to happen before the deadline.
So what do you think is the most likely danger for Lavender?
Parvati asked. Hermione looked over the list again.
Honestly, none of them. Professor Trelawney said that thing you are dreading will happen on October 16th. I think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. She created an expectation that something you dread will happen on that day. But the way the prophecy was worded, any unfortunate thing that happens will technically satisfy it. The thing you really dread most right now, Lavender, is hearing bad news on October 16th in fulfillment of prophecy. And it really won't matter what it is so long as you choose to view it as dreadful.
The other two girls stared at Hermione in silent amazement.
Wow, Hermione, Lavender said in a hushed voice. You're so deep.
Beside her, Parvati nodded her head furiously in agreement. Hermione shrugged almost helplessly.
Thanks.
By midnight, everyone in Slytherin House was in bed, and, for the most part, asleep. Alone in his room, Harry Potter wasted 5 fruitless minutes trying to summon his wand from its spot on his dresser before giving up. In the room next door, Theo No-Name spent a few rather more productive minutes setting up wards on his door to keep out intruders, something that was now a part of his daily routine. And in the room on the other side of Harry's, Blaise Zabini drafted a quick and completely innocuous letter to his mother about the events of his first day back, before flipping the part... before flipping the parchment over to write a second letter on the backside with invisible ink. In another part of the dungeon, 6 first-year girls were sharing a room together. Four of them tossed and turned all night, their dreams troubled by a persistent feeling of terrible unease. The other two, Flora and Hestia Caro, slept quite well, if in a peculiar manner, for neither girl slept with her eyes closed. Instead, they both lay flat on their backs, as if dead to the world, their sightless, unblinking eyes staring out into the abyss that surrounded them. They slept, and in their dreams, they made plans. September 1993. Muggle Studies. Muggle studies. Professor Lily Potter's Muggle Studies class was during the first period of the day and required students to rise and take breakfast early. Historically, the early time was considered one... Historically, the early time was considered one reason for the class's unpopularity. Other equally valid reasons included widespread anti-Muggle bigotry and also how embarrassingly out of date the subject matter had been under the prior instructor, who had finally been dismissed in 1991 after admitting to having no... after admitting to having no idea what an automobile was, despite the early start time, Professor Potter was quite pleased with the size of this year's class, and also somewhat surprised that it actually included at least two children of former Death Eaters. Neither Harry nor Jim was taking a class, of course. She had informed Jim the previous year that he could not take a class under his own mother just to get an easy A. Certainly isn't an A, is it? Okay, scroll up. Okay, good. Well, Hermione refers to O's earlier when talking to Ron, but she probably is talking about the actual owls. What then to do about Jesus of Nazareth? Yeah, but you don't talk about easy averages. That's not what you talk about. You talk about easy. There's absolutely no question that Sinister meant that in the case of an easy A. I mean, it really is sort of like, okay, how deep do we take this? Because it's like... it's like, how do grades at Hogwarts work? Because they certainly... I'm somewhat given to understand that, like, in England, like, you don't really super get... Like, you get marks, but you don't, like, it doesn't matter at all until you get to your, like, the exams or something. I don't know how the year-to-year works. I remember somebody from England ranting about how, like, yeah, but that's not what you talk about. You don't talk about an easy pass until you're in college, you know. You know what? It isn't necessarily the case that they're talking about just this year. They might be talking about the owls actually. So I'm just gonna say, oh. That's no. He could not take a class under his own mother just to get an easy O. Harry, on the other hand, had never expressed the slightest interest in Muggle studies. A fact that she fought to view as completely sensible for a Muggle-raised student. No matter how insistently a voice in the back of her head suggested that it wasn't the class that turned him away, but the teacher. After checking rolls, she went around the room, asking various students what they hoped to get out of the class. Daphne Greengrass said that her family's businesses occasionally required them to interact with Muggles, and her parents expected all their children to be able to do so without drawing attention to themselves. Ernie McMillan said much the same. Susan Bones said that she'd been embarrassed in the past by her ignorance about basic Muggle facts and wanted to learn more about them. Gregory Goyle grudgingly said that his father was making him take the class. It seems a Muggle had once nearly killed him with a ruffle, because he didn't know what it was at first. Lily assumed he'd meant rifle, but let the mistake pass for the moment. It'd do no good to embarrass a pureblood with Goyle's background on the first day, least of all by inquiring under what circumstances Goyle Sr. had been shot at by an armed... Goyle Sr. had been shot at by an armed Muggle. Hermione Granger, the only Muggle born in the room other than Lily herself, hesitated before saying simply that she thought it would be fascinating to see what wizards actually thought about Muggles. For a moment, Lily wondered if she detected a hint of bitterness from the girl who so many people had compared her to at the... But when she studied Hermione's face, she saw only bland attentiveness. And so it went, until Lily finally asked Theo No Name, who was sitting on the back row by himself, and the boy said flatly, "Because I might end up living among them for the rest of my life," which caused a brief flutter of tension to pass over the room. The introductions over, Lily began her lecture. "Let's start today with the most obvious question. Miss Bones, can you tell us what exactly a Muggle is?" Susan swallowed a bit nervously at being picked out first. "Well, I suppose I'd say that a Muggle was someone with no magic." "Mm-hmm," Lily replied thoughtfully. "So how does that definition apply to squibs?" Susan hesitated. "Well, squibs can't cast spells or work once, but they do have some magic." "True to a point," the teacher said. "A first-generation squib can usually brew a basic potion successfully and operate most enchanted objects, though not all of them can. Such abilities are incredibly rare among second-generation squibs and unheard of among anyone in later generations. And yet a squib is still capable of passing on a magical inheritance and siring a wizarding child, whether directly or generations later. Of course, there is little reliable evidence about how easily a squib of any generation can sire a wizarding child. In large part because our government has banned such research for centuries," Lily thought to herself. "But since I don't want to get fired or worse, I'll pass over that. But there have been documented cases of supposed Muggleborns who have successfully traced their lineage back to a squib who had been born into a wizarding family as much as 7 generations before." Out of the entire class, Hermione was the only one not shocked by the teacher's words, as she had tracked her own genealogy back to a wizarding's just 3 generations removed. For all the good it did her, but her classmates all looked at one another in surprise. She wondered how many of her pure-blooded classmates would still cling to blood supremacy after a year of this class. "Probably most," she thought rather cynically. "I have gotten to know them pretty well, after all." Professor Potter continued, "But we're straying afar from the field of Muggle studies, so let me rephrase the question. Mr. McMillan, how long do you think Muggles have existed?" The question obviously confused the young Hufflepuff. "I never really thought about it. Oh, wait, no. I've never really thought about it. I suppose there have always been Muggles."
What do you want to hear?
you suppose wrong, Mr. McMillan, Lily said lightly. There have always been people without magic. Whether they were called no magis, mundanes, les sans magie. Langweilig mention, or any number of other terms, some of which were descriptive, while others were meant as insulting, but we have only called them muggles since 1692 or so. Can you guess why, Mr. McMillan? Can you guess why, Mr. McMillan?
How was that, you bastard?
Where should the stress go in that word? Les sans magie, langweilig mention.
There we go. I know the SH sound of course the end was fucked up, but I did a fucking retroflex for some reason. I don't know why I did that. That was weird.
Mention.
That's what I did. Why did I do that? That's so stupid. I don't believe that the German has any retroflexes. I would be kind of surprised if it did. English certainly fucking doesn't.
Ernie thought for a moment, and then his eyes lit up. The statute of secrecy, he exclaimed. Quite so. In 1692, the International Statute of Secrecy went fully into effect. I'm sure you're all aware of what an important law that was and is, but what you may not fully appreciate was that it was far more than an act of multinational legislation. The Statute of Secrecy is a magical law, a monumental spell of global reach backed by the combined magic of the ICW member countries. It was powered by the raw magical energies of entire nation states, all funneled into a spell cast cooperatively, by over a hundred of the most powerful and skilled witches and wizards of the day. It is quite possibly the most. It is quite possibly the most powerful spell ever cast in recorded history. And the power and breadth of that spell cannot be overstated. Literally overnight, nearly all of the world's non-magical people simply forgot that magic and those who could work it ever existed. Please understand, before the statue's passage, everyone knew about magic. Every king and queen in Europe had a court wizard as part of their retinue, and likely dozens of prominent wizard folk of noble ancestry among their courtiers. In fact, John Dee, the court wizard and spy master of Queen Elizabeth I, had so much influence over her government that he is credited with inventing. had so much influence over her government that he is credited with inventing the term the British Empire. Military conflicts across the globe and dating back thousands of years had employed war wizards alongside mortal soldiers ever since the Dark Lord Sargon of Akkad became the first wizard and one of the first people to forge an empire with himself as ruler. Throughout much of human history,
every sizable village had at least one village healer, or wise man or woman, who was actually a self-taught wizard or witch who had lived among the non-magicals. Jewish and Christian non-magicals all knew the story of the wizard Moses and the magical duels he fought against the wizards of Egypt to win his people's freedom, and then in the space of a single day, all of the non-magicals simply forgot all of it. Legends about magic endured, but only as stories, fairy tales and myths that many people knew but almost no one remembered from any personal experience. Lily's eyes lit up as she warmed to the subject, and it wasn't just memories. A vast number of Muggle historical records were magically edited or erased to eliminate any credible information about wizard kind. Statues and paintings of famous wizard folk were altered so that everyone would forget the... Statues and paintings of famous wizard folk were altered so that everyone would forget the real people depicted in them. No. So that everyone would forget the real people depicted in them. Some wizards and witches were removed from the historical record outright, while others simply had their biographies altered to excise any references to wizardry. Circe.
Give me tomes, you piece of shit. Copy. Okay, I mean, she's not going to say tones.
Circe, Lao Tzu, Hermes Trimesticus.
I don't know what the SG is doing in the middle of that. Is there any way that it's Trismegistus? Is there any possibility that's actually accurate? Hermes Trismegistus. There's no way, right? No, it's actually Trismegistus. But it's not Trismegistus.
Hermes Trismegistus? No. Hermes Trismegistus? Roger Bacon? St. Patrick? Johann Faustus? Leonardo da Vinci? No. Leonardo da Vinci. And... And innumerable others, part of the Holy Bible itself that had previously discussed magic, and those who worked it were edited. And those who worked it were edited to exclude us. And the same happens with the Torah, the Quran, the Mahabharata, the Code of Hammurabi, the Magna Carta, and countless others. And countless fictional and non-fictional works dating back to before the time of Homer. One of Shakespeare's plays, Love's Labour's One, was eliminated completely from the Muggle canon because it was a romantic comedy about star-crossed lovers attending Hogwarts together. If you're interested in Elizabethan-era views on magic, there's a surviving copy of that play in the library. And that is when we started calling them Muggles. The term was derived from a medieval English word, mug. At the time it meant a foolish person, specifically one who had been deceived by others, and so muggle came to mean a non-magical person who must be tricked into disbelieving in magic. Please note the word I just used.
Please note the word I just used. Not someone who has been tricked or who should be tricked, but someone who must be tricked. Because as powerful and extraordinary as the Statute of Secrecy is, its power is not inviolate, and its reach is not absolute. Individual muggles can accept that magic is real if they personally observe its use. And if a sufficiently large number of muggles ever did learn that magic existed, it is feared that the statute itself... It is feared that the statute itself would collapse, and all the hidden evidence of our existence would be laid bare. In which case, more than... The more than 5.5 billion muggles in the world would instantly realize that an entire... The more than 5.5 billion muggles in existence... No. The more than 5.5 billion muggles in this world would instantly realize that an entire global subculture of people who could work real magic has been hiding among them invisibly for centuries. And believe me, the muggles of 1993 are not the muggles of 1692. They have arts and powers of their own now, and if a conflict broke out between wizards and muggles today, there is no guarantee who'd win. But either way, the entire world would be the loser. At that, there was a snicker from one student. Mr. Goyle, do you have something to add? The boy blushed at being called out. Sorry, Professor, but how could we lose a war against muggles, no matter how many of them there are? I mean, they're muggles. Hermione rolled her eyes at that, but she noted that while most of her pure-blooded classmates seemed to disapprove of his crudeness, none of them seemed to disagree with the content of his words. The professor just smirked. And that, Mr. Goyle, is why you are here, to learn about what muggles are, what they can do, and why they cannot be ignored or dismissed. Tell me, class, has any wizard or witch ever been to the moon? Most of the students laughed out loud at the suggestion, though Hermione merely smiled. She alone knew where the teacher was headed. That's impossible, Professor, said Ernie McMillan. No wizard can operate outside the terrestrial sphere. Very true, Mr. McMillan, very true, she said. And then she turned and waved her wand at a large scrapbook on her desk. The book flipped open, and with another wave, a particular photo was lifted up off the page and enlarged to cover the rear wall. Hermione knew the image well, but it astonished all the other students. This, Lily continued as she pointed at the stunning blue Earl. As she pointed at the stunning blue orb that took up most of the wall, is the planet Earth, as viewed from the surface of the moon. The grey landscape at the bottom is the lunar surface near the crater known as the Sea of Tranquility. She waved her wand again, and another picture rose up to replace the first, one depicting an astronaut on the lunar surface. This is Neil Armstrong, an American muggle who was the first person to walk on the moon in July of 1969. As a 9-year-old child who knew nothing of the wizarding world, I watched television coverage of the Apollo 11 landing, as did untold millions of other muggles. The suit Armstrong wears is called a space suit, and he had to wear it at all times while on the moon. Because there is no air there, and he would have died almost instantly without it. Another wand wave. This is a picture of the Saturn V rocket, which carried Armstrong and two others more than 225,000 miles above the Earth to reach the moon. The rocket is about 363 feet tall. Only this small piece at the top contained the three muggles, while most of the remaining structure was comprised of the rocket assembly. Think of these rockets as large tubes filled with an imp- Think of these rockets as large tubes filled with a highly explosive compound that hurled the ship upwards with what can best be described as a carefully controlled detonation of unimaginable force. The entire mission lasted 24 days, but was years in the making. The project required the work of thousands of Muggles and cost the American military government the equivalent of roughly 35 million galleons in today's currency. And they put forth all that effort and expense for no reason except the spirit of exploration to do what had never been done before. At that, Hermione nearly raised her hands to ask a question but thought better of it. As a well-read Muggle, she knew that there were factors other than the spirit of exploration behind the lunar mission, namely the space race and the desire of the Americans to dominate the Soviet Union, which had been the first nation to put a man into orbit. But then she realized that the global conflict between the USSR and the West might be a bit much for a class of purebloods, the most insulated of whom had assumed that Muggles were all illiterate peasants. If nothing else, Hermione thought to herself as she noticed how speechless her classmates were, maybe Professor Potter will at least cure them of that illusion.
All right. That'll get it for today, guys.
Okay. Ministry of Magic, Auror's office. 8:45 a.m. As he walked past the waiting room outside the Auror department, James Potter was surprised to see a familiar face, if one not usually seen in this part of the ministry. "Peter!" he exclaimed in surprise. "What are you doing here?" The solicitor held up a bundle of parchments. "Bookkeeping matters, I'm afraid. I've compiled the audit of this year's charity proceeds from Jim's birthday party. I need you to sign them so I can get them filed on time. I should have contacted you yesterday, but I got held up and it totally slipped my mind." James smiled at his best friend. "Not a problem. I don't have any meetings before 10. Come on in." With that, James led Pettigrew into the senior command area of the Auror's office, bypassing the usual security checkpoints as they went. Soon they were in his office, where the chief Auror and trustee of the Jim Potter Charitable Trust dutifully signed every dotted line pointed out by the solicitor and then stamped them with his lord's ring. As he did so, Peter made a point of asking innocuous but thoughtful questions, usually every time it looked like James might be tempted to stop and read something. "So, any movement on the Death Eater investigation?" he asked. "No. We are still pursuing our leads, but there hasn't been anything other than..." "We are still pursuing our leads, but there hasn't been anything other than rumors and speculation since the breakout. We're about ready to shut down all international Porky operations that don't originate out of the Ministry Porky office, but it may be closing the gate after the hippogriffs are all gone. Besides, assuming they haven't fled the country already, they could still use an illegal Porky." out of Thurso. "Thurso?" Peter inquired, as if he didn't know the name well. "It's a small fishing village on the northern Scottish coast. It's the only point that lies outside the Porky warning system. Amelia has been saying for years that we ought to do something to close that security hole, no matter how much it costs, just like Crouch before her and probably every other DML head since the founding of the ministry." "Would it really cost that much?" James sighed. "I'm hardly a warding expert, but apparently it would..." "I'm hardly a warding expert, but apparently it would require a requirement. But apparently it would require..." That's really hard to say. But apparently it would require adjusting ley lines over an area of roughly 500 square miles at a cost of over 10% of the ministry's annual budget. Oh, and also to take about 3 years. We're probably just going to assign a permanent order detail in there. We're probably just going to assign a permanent order detail there instead. Like we're not short on orders as it is. Peter nodded and fought to keep a frown. Peter nodded and fought to keep a frown off his face. If all orders were being assigned to Thurso, he might have to alter some of his plans. Any news on the SKPs? He asked to change the subject. Nothing I can share publicly. Peter laughed. Not even to your seneschal. James smiled at his oldest remaining friend. Sorry. If there's any news to report to the Wizard Gamut, you'll be the first to hear it. Then he tilted his head and studied the other man. Say, do you have any dinner plans? It's been a while since we've just sat and talked. Maybe we could crack a bottle of wine and reminisce about the good old o-
Nope.
Maybe we could crack a bottle of wine and reminisce about the good old Marauder days before everything went well. Peter considered. Would have to be an early dinner with not too much wine. I have a prior engagement later that evening. Oh, the other man said with a saucy grin. What's her name? Get your mind out of the gutter, Potter. It's a business matter. If you say so, Potter said while wriggling his eyebrows suggestively. The leaky cauldron about five. A few beers over a few beers over shepherd's pie. I look forward to it. Nah. I look forward to it, Peter answered gamely as he shuffled the signed parchments. But for now, I'm off to wrangle with goblin accountants for the better part of the day. He headed for the door, but James called out before he could leave. Peter, he said with sudden hesitation. Thank you. Whatever for? Pettigrew asked with curiosity. We're not saying I told you so after Black's escape. As I recall, if you'd had your way, Sirius would have died in an alleyway 12 years ago. You were right about him. All the way back in sixth year after the... all the way back in sixth year after the prank. I should have listened to you then. Peter stared at James with an emotionless mask. For a brief second, he wondered where they would both be today if James had indeed listened to him all those years ago. The Gryffindor Common Room, 15 November 1976, 1 o'clock a.m., 14 days after the prank. I cannot believe this, Peter said bitterly. I absolutely cannot believe that you're just letting it go. Like it was nothing. It wasn't nothing, Pete, James replied. I know it was a big deal, but it's been 2 weeks, and Sirius has spent every minute of it begging our forgiveness. Remus has already forgiven him. Why can't you? I don't know, prongs? The boy sneered. Maybe because I value Remus's life more than he does himself. Come on, Wormy, that's not fair, James replied, without noticing the grimace Peter gave at the use of the nickname Padfoot had christened him with. Sirius really does feel bad. And in the end, no one got hurt? Peter glared at James, only to turn away at his friend's pleading expression. He's a violent, sadistic bully, James. The boy said in a low, angry voice. You know that, right? Remus and I have outgrown our silly marauder pranks. You only go after Snivellus and immediately stop that. But your precious Padfoot still hexes every Slytherin who crosses his path, along with any Ravenclaws he deems too arrogant to suit him and every Hufflepuff who travels alone. He's a thug with a wand for all his precious pure-blood breeding. James looked down, unwilling to deny Peter's accusation. No. Unwilling to outright deny Peter's accusations. He says he's willing to change. Then if we forgive him and let him back in the Marauders, he won't prank anyone else ever again. Come on, Pete.
If you think that badly of him, then this is your chance to help him be better. To finally grow up. And besides, you know he wouldn't have done something like that to Snively and Mooney. You know he wouldn't have done something like that to Snively and Mooney if it hadn't been for that business with Marlene. You know how that must have affected his judgment. Despite everything, we're all friends. And friends forgive each other. Peter leaned his head back to rest against the couch and closed his eyes tiredly. All right, he finally said. I'll let it go. I suppose if Mooney is willing to forgive him, it would be churlish of me not to as well. James grinned and clasped Peter on the shoulder. Peter did not smile. James rose then to go and tell Sirius the news that the Marauders were back together, but before he could leave the common room, Peter called out,
I do have one question, though. Would you have forgiven me that easily?
James turned back to him and cocked his head in confusion.
What do you mean?
Peter rose and walked up close to the leader of their little club, staring up into the taller boy's eyes with a cool expression.
I mean, if I'd played a stupid petty trick on someone I didn't like, with the possible result of seeing them either bitten by a werewolf or killed outright, and the equally possible result of Walden McNair coming to Hogwarts with a big shiny axe for cutting off Mooney's head, would you have simply forgiven me, after barely 2 weeks?
James' eyebrows shot up in surprise.
Peter, of course I would,
he said unconvincingly.
No, Peter replied grimly. Now, I'm sorry, but I don't believe you. The Marauders are all friends, but only James and Sirius are the best friends. I've known that since we were 11, but I never expected it to be demonstrated so graphically. I can forgive that, as easily as I can forgive what your psychopathic best mate did. But don't expect me to ever forget either of them.
And with that, Peter Pettigrew turned and walked away, leaving James Potter alone. It wasn't the first step that set Pettigrew on the path to his destiny, nor was it the last step, but it was certainly a big step. Now. Peter's blank face suddenly broke out into a cheerful grin.
Honestly, Prongs, I got all the I told you so's out of my system in 1981. If you want to thank me for anything, do it by putting an end to that miserable traitor who's after my godson.
It will be a pleasure, James said with a smile. Peter nodded and left the office for Gringotts. He was alone in the elevator, and so took the time to review the documents James had signed to make sure they were all in order. When he saw they were, he grinned again, only it was malicious instead of cheerful.
You're so very welcome, James, he said to himself. Mischief managed indeed.
Okay, that was way less than I thought it was going to be. I am going to go on to the next chapter. That'd be ridiculous to stop it there. That was like 10 fucking minutes.